When I was a boy, our house was about 20 minutes from the lake. And at the lake, there was this big park where people would go and they would sit up there for the afternoon. They'd take their boats with them, and we would go every now and then to the lake. We'd go with the youth group. We'd go with the church staff. We'd go with the church family. And we'd sit up at the lake for the afternoon. Several people would bring their boats and launch them, and we would spend an afternoon by the lake. Some people would go wakeboarding. Some people would go skiing. Some people would go kneeboarding. But for me, when I was a boy, it was the tubing. There would always be a time in the afternoon when a few boats would hook up a tube behind their boat for anyone who wanted to have a ride. See, this was when I would ride in the afternoon. For those of you that have been tubing before behind a boat, you know that there's a really important consideration when you get onto a tube behind a boat. The defining decision when riding on a tube is not the tube. It's not even the water. The defining decision when you get onto a tube behind a boat is always the driver. Deciding which tube to ride is all about the driver. Because the type of ride when you have when you get on that tube is entirely up to the driver. See, if they turn 90 degrees in a boat, that's not a difficult turn. But if you're on the tube behind the boat, that's not an easy turn. See, when I was a boy, the type of ride that I wanted was very specific. If you're into snow skiing, then the type of ride I wanted would be the equivalent of a green circle, which is the complete opposite to a black diamond. See, I was after the gentle ride on the tube, which was something that many of the boat drivers promised, but not many of them delivered on. So every time I got onto a tube behind a boat, I had to answer a very simple but challenging question. Can the boat driver be trusted? Can they be trusted to do what they are telling me that they will do? See, that was the question continually of my tubing experiences. Can the driver of the boat be trusted? See, when we think about God, many of us ask the same question. Can God be trusted? That question gets phased in a ton of different ways, but ultimately it comes down to that same question that we have to ask ourselves. Can God be trusted? For the people of the Old Testament, that was a question that they lived with all the time. Can God be trusted? See, their heritage story was of this couple who God created and who lived with God in deepest relationship. They walked and they talked and they lived every day together. The most pure relationship that you can imagine. And God gave them this beautiful space to live in, and he said to them, you can live wherever you want in this space, you can eat whatever you want, except for this one tree. But the rest of it is yours. This couple had this decision to make. Will we trust God that all is good except this one thing that he doesn't want us to do? Can God be trusted? Right from the beginning of the story, that is the question. Can God be trusted? And this couple, Adam and Eve is what they're called in the Bible, this couple believe that no, God cannot be trusted. So this one tree, this tree of the knowledge of good and evil, it's called. I think a better name for it might be the tree of getting to decide what is good and what is evil. They decided that God couldn't be trusted to decide what was good and what was evil. That God could not be trusted, to decide what was right and what was wrong. So they took a bite from the fruit of this tree because they wanted to make those decisions for themselves. What's interesting about the story is that even as God clothes them and cares for them and looks after them and removes them from being stuck in their perpetual mistrust of God, God makes them a promise. God promised them that one day God would set the relationship right. God would make all as it's supposed to be. God would restore them to full relationship. God would get rid of everything that was in the way of their relationship. See, that's the promise that God makes to them. And so for the people of the Old Testament, for the people who have heard this, they have heard the stories of the ancestors deciding that God could not be trusted. But they've also heard the stories of God saying that he would provide redemption for them. And so the question that they're living with is, can God be trusted? Over and over again, they ask that question. In the desert, can God be trusted? In the wilderness, can God be trusted? In the midst of battle, can God be trusted? In the midst of famine, can God be trusted? In their homes, can God be trusted? In captivity to other nations, can God be trusted? See, that was their question. But it's also our question. Can God be trusted? We look around, and there's so many different ways that we can live our lives. I think that all of us here today want to live a life that has meaning. We want to live a life that has hope, a life that has fulfillment, a life that has value. And yet we hear this promise of Jesus who says that he has come to give us the life that is truly life. So we ask the key question, can God really be trusted? Can God be trusted to give us the life that is truly life? Can I trust God with my family? Can I trust God with my finances? Can I trust God with my workplace? Can I trust God with the entirety of my life? Can God be trusted? To a world who were asking that question, that's the world into which Jesus came. That's the world into which Jesus was born and lived the life that we were created to live. But as Jesus lived that life, something strange happened. Because people watched it and went, oh, I'm not sure I like that. Because the life that Jesus lived was a life that was about sacrifice, not about power. A life that was about putting other people first rather than pursuing your own interests. It was a life that was about trusting someone other than yourself. So the question of whether God could be trusted was a difficult question for them to ask. You see, that's also a difficult question for us. There's so many places that we can turn to try and find life. We turn to our relationships to find life because we don't know if God can be trusted. We turn to food or to alcohol to find life because we don't know if God can be trusted. We turn to internet pages, we turn to stories different than our own because we don't know if God can be trusted. The ultimate question when it comes to our relationship with God is, can God be trusted? The beauty of today is that in front of you on the stage have stood five completely different people. Five people from different cultures, from different backgrounds, from different ages, different ways of life. And all of them have stood before you today in order to proclaim that their God can be trusted. They've been baptized as a public declaration that the God they follow is a God who can be trusted. What I find beautiful about today is that these are five people from completely different ways of life. They're from completely different spheres. They're people who might not have ever met each other or perhaps been friends with each other were it not for the fact that they believe in a God who can be trusted. Today is Easter Sunday. Today we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And in doing so, we celebrate that our God can be trusted. Our God is a God who keeps his promises. I don't believe that there is a place in the world where we see that more clearly than in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Let me read to you from Matthew chapter 28. It says this, after the Sabbath, as the first light of the new week dawned, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to keep vigil at the tomb. Suddenly the earth reeled and rocked under their feet as God's angel came down from heaven, came right up to where they were standing. He rolled back the stone and then sat on it. Shafts of lightning blazed from him, his garments shimmered snow white. The guards at the tomb were scared to death. They were so frightened they couldn't move. The angel spoke to the woman. "There is nothing to fear here. I know you're looking for Jesus, the one they nailed to the cross. He is not here. He was raised just as he said. Come and look at the place where he was placed. Now get on your way quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead. He's going on ahead of you to Galilee. You will see him there." That's the message. The women, deep in wonder and full of joy, lost no time in leaving the tomb. They ran to tell the disciples. Then Jesus met them, stopping them in their tracks. "Good morning," he said. They fell to their knees, embraced his feet, and worshiped him. There's so much beauty within that story. But as I read it this week, there were four words that just leapt off the page at me. And the words are this: just as he said. You are looking for Jesus. He is not here. He was raised just as he said. See, we believe here that our God can be trusted. Because in Jesus, we see someone who keeps his promises. Right back in Genesis 3, God makes the promise that one day someone would come who would defeat death, who would cause the end of death as the end, and would bring life. And then Jesus comes, and throughout his life, he says things like, "I have to die, but I'm going to rise again. You know that I'm going to be executed, but 3 days later, when I'm alive again, here's what we'll do." Multiple times he says this to his disciples. And then on the day that he rises again, the angels who proclaim his resurrection say to his followers, "He is just doing what he said he would do. He is not here. He is risen, just as he said." See, on this Resurrection Sunday, what we recognize is that our God is a God who keeps his promises. When God promises to defeat sin and death and to give us life everlasting, when God says that he'll do that, he does that. See, we all know people who don't keep their promises. We all know people who say that they will do something, but they never actually do it. "I'll call you this weekend. Let's have lunch together. I'll pay you back." You all have people in mind, don't you? We're going to name them all next. No. See, there's one promise that nobody can make and keep. And that promise is this: after I die, I will come back to life. When Jesus makes the promise that he will rise from the dead, he is making an impossible promise. Yet on Resurrection Sunday, we celebrate that Jesus keeps that promise. This is a promise that only God can keep. And in keeping that promise, he reminds us that the God we follow is a God who can be trusted. That means that when Jesus says that he's come so that we may have life that is truly life, this is a promise that we can believe in. This is a promise that we can trust. Because as much as the way of Jesus looks completely different to the ways of living that we see around us, we know that all those other ways of living, they don't lead to the life that is truly life. The only way to the life that is truly life is through Jesus Christ. And the only way that's possible is because Jesus died and he rose again. This morning, as we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, and as we've celebrated these baptisms that you saw in front of you on the stage, our intention in all of this today is to proclaim that our God can be trusted. That because Jesus rose from the dead and kept the greatest promise that was ever made, we no longer need to fear death. We no longer need to find other ways to experience life. Because Jesus says, "I am the way and the truth and the life. If we give our lives to Jesus, as these five people have demonstrated today, we know that there is no greater life we can experience, because this is the life that we were created for. Amen.